Hey guys, welcome to the Brain and Brand Show. I'm your host, Timothy Maurice. Thanks so much for choosing this episode and sharing it with those you care about. Today's episode is about helping you find the right fit. Many of you are stuck working in a company that is simply the wrong fit. Maybe they are wonderful, and so are you, but it's just not the right alignment, and therefore creates misery for both parties, especially you. My guest today, Dr. Andre Martin, is one of the world's leading authorities. He's an organizational psychologist and has worked with Target, Nike, Google, Disney, and more. We will unpack his latest book, Wrong Fit, Right Fit: Why How We Work Matters More Than Ever. This conversation will help you move towards getting unstuck and finding the right fit. Meet Dr. Andre Martin. Enjoy. I think this is a great place to start the conversation. Andre, welcome.
Timothy, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me today.
Thanks for making time. You know, we are different parts of the world. I'm in the southern part of Africa. Where are you?
I'm in Portland, Oregon today.
Are you based there?
I'm based there. So I currently am serving as the culture strategist in residence for a creative firm called Joyful that does a lot of internal work on activating culture and getting people to be re-recruited back to the companies, fall in love with them again. And I'm also getting ready to do a personal move towards Southern California, where my wife's from. We're going to live near to family.
Nice. How far from San Diego?
Just about an hour north. So in San Clemente, California.
Nice, nice. I love that part of the world. I got a chance to do some work for a tech company out there. So you're very fortunate. So yeah. Do you guys do any work for Nike? You are in Portland. Isn't Nike based in Portland, Oregon?
So Nike is based in Portland, Oregon. I used to work at Nike. So I spent about five years as the chief talent officer for Nike. Enjoyed the time. Wonderful company. Great brand.
Nice.
Amazing, you know, sort of central feature in the Pacific Northwest for sure, is one of the great brands out of this area of the world.
I need to go inside your mind. We have a wonderful feature here where we ask you seven questions to get to know you, to set the stage for this conversation. Can I do that?
Let's do it. I'm ready.
Here we go. Inside your mind. Number one, laptop or iPad?
Laptop.
You said that with a lot of conviction.
I love my Mac. I've had them for years. I've spent most of my life on the road, as Timothy, I'm sure you do too. And that laptop in your backpack is, you know, it's my security blanket. It connects me to the world.
Yeah. Water or coffee?
I'm going to go with coffee. I like starting my morning with a little cup of coffee and some reflection.
Walking or jogging?
I'm a walker. I have two English labs. They're sitting right next to me if they end up making noise. And so my wife and I take them around the trails in Portland almost every day.
I've just seen some mind-blowing research on how the power of walking. If you walk an hour a day, it's incredible. Sunrise or sunset?
Sunrise. I grew up in the Midwest. I was lived on a farm when I was a kid. And so, you know, I'm up before the sun. I am a farmer at heart.
So you're a member of the 5 a.m. club.
Oh, I might push a little bit further there for you, Timothy. I might be the 4, I might be the 4 a.m. club, my friend.
Lunch with Trump or Biden?
Oh, I'm going to go with Biden.
Interesting.
For a couple of reasons. Sitting president, I just think his career in public service is something that I would love to dig into and learn about. And I, you know, I appreciate his story. He's had a lot of hardship. He hasn't given up hope.
Yep. It'd be interesting to have them back to back, right? Imagine having lunch with Biden and then having a chat with Trump. I mean, it would be fascinating.
Fascinating.
Number six, driving or Ubering?
I'm a driver. I love the car. You know, give me a chance to take a good road trip and see the world on the back roads of America or South America for that, South Africa for that standpoint, I would do it in a second.
Nice. And then finally, this one should be super easy. Nike or Adidas?
Oh, I worked at Nike. I love the brand. And growing up, I had an affinity for Adidas, so I kind of have a love affair with both.
Yeah, but that does not how the game works. You got to choose.
All right, I'm going to choose Nike.
All right, cool. I'm gonna let you off the hook. What percentage of employees do you think? I mean, I know this is hard to say, but I mean, you've done a bit of research. And what percentage of employees out there do you think are happy?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say, if I had to put a number on it, I would probably have to say 21% are fully engaged. I'm using
Oh,
Gallup
really?
research when I talk about that, right? So Gallup would tell
Okay.
us there's an estimated $8.8 trillion of lost productivity in the workplace due to disengagement. They would also say that fully engaged, so they're thriving at work. They put that
Got
number
it.
about 21%, and it hasn't moved a great deal in the last decade. Now, I think that fully engaged numbers are very different than people who go to work and, don't feel the drag of it being a wrong fit. But, I think we have some work to do in this space, Timothy.
When did you find your first right fit organization for yourself?
I was really lucky. It's a great question. I started my career as an organizational psychologist working at a consulting firm. I went to Disney for a couple of years, which I loved, but I wouldn't say it was an exact right fit for me. My first right fit was the Center for Creative Leadership. So I was
Oh, wow. I've partnered with them
29.
before. Incredible.
I was a senior associate there, and they're a large nonprofit executive development firm. They probably have 20,000 leaders come through their programs a
Yep.
year. And there's three reasons it was a right fit. One, I was surrounded by people who believed in what I believed in, right? There was just an affinity for the cause. I think secondly is I had amazing mentors. I was so young in the field and I was surrounded by these great minds who were just giving of their knowledge and their time. And third, it felt like most of my day was going to impactful or meaningful pieces of work, right? I mean, I just
Oh,
every
wow.
day you're in the classroom, you're facilitating leaders, they wanting to become more self-aware, better at their role. And I think that was probably the first time. The last part of it was happened to be in an area of the country I loved, which was in Colorado Springs in the mountains of Colorado. So that didn't hurt either.
Incredible. I have to say hello to one of my high school friends' mom, Chad Smith's mom. She worked at the center out of Greensboro, North Carolina.
Okay.
And I remember in high school going to the center after school with him. And, she would take us to play sports, et cetera. And maybe 3 years ago, I got a chance to collaborate with them after all those years. Just an incredible, incredible story. When they first reached out to me, it was like shocking. But you're right. They do really, really meaningful work. It's just such a beautiful, beautiful moment. Let's talk a little bit about why you think you keep attracting the right fit. And the reason why I'm asking you this, because oftentimes people write books like this, and I'm sure there are many reasons you wrote this book from, it really works for your career, maybe it's personal, et cetera. And if you want to expand on that, you can. But ultimately, is there something inside of an individual, almost like this magnetic dynamic that helps people attract more positive, better aligned fits?
Timothy, that's a generous question. I would kind of word it like this, right? I believe that there is a tremendous power in intention, right? I think in the current generation's framework, they would talk about that as manifesting your destiny, right? You can manifest your future. And although I don't believe that's true, right? What I do believe is that if you can have two things at depth, the first one is self-awareness. You know who you are. That means you know what you love, what you're good at, and the life you're trying to build. And you can sort of build this strength, the skill of intention, which is literally waking up every day and saying, hey, here's what I want my day to look like. Now, it's not going to guarantee it's going to go that way, but what it does is it takes away all the noise. So I'm just a firm believer that, hey, opportunities are existing out there in the world for us every day, right? The vast majority of the time, we just don't see them, because we haven't sort of brought intention to our day. And we know that right now we're overloaded. right now we're still processing through a lot of stress from the pandemic and macroeconomic environment, and I mean all things like wars and such. And we're also sort of running at pace, right? That means we've sort of forgotten the skill of just stopping and being. I think all those things being equal, along with social media and just this idea that there's got to be greener grass somewhere, I don't know that we're bringing as much intention to the day. And so that for me has been a big driving force in both the book and in my life, is to say, hey, if I can frame what I'm looking for, I might not find exactly what it is, but there's a better chance, better odds that I'll see something that might take me a step in that direction.
Wow. I was thinking for a moment. I'm like, I can imagine there's somebody out there listening going, the unemployment rates are fairly high in a lot of the world, and I'm a little bit afraid to make the leap. I know there may be a better company out there for me, but I'm gonna stay locked into this miserable situation because it's better that taking that risk. What would you say to them?
I would say this. I would say anybody who's feeling the drag of a place that isn't quite a right fit for them, right? That they may walk in and they feel like everyone else has a secret decoder ring to success except for them. They're having to work really hard just to keep their head above water. I would say this to them. I think there's a couple of things I'd do before I looked for a job, a new job, a new place, a new opportunity. The first one is do that deep self-reflection. Right. In the book, we have a number of excursions that I'm sure we'll talk about that were really built in order to help people think about things like, what do I actually value? How do I like to work? What am I good at? Not what I'm passionate about, but what am I really good at in this world? Who's my ideal leader? What am I solving for in the long term? That is, what do I want my life to look like 10 to 15 years from now? And most importantly, in this moment in time, what am I solving for right now? Because the truth is, if you don't answer that question, you might leave a job and hey, you might not be able to find another one. Or, I remember early in my career, Timothy, I started my career working at steel mills in the north of the US. And one of the early lessons I learned in my job was I was working on assessing line shift leaders in a manufacturing plant, right, in a steel mill. And I remember this job because I would meet these individuals, brilliant, smart, savvy, great with people, decisive, all the skills to be a fantastic leader. And I would assess them, I'm like, you are perfect for this job. And they'd be like, I don't want it. I'm like, I remember thinking, how can you not want that job? And they said, you know what I love about this job is that I know when I come in at 8 that I'm going to be done at 5 and I can leave it all here. And I can go and use this job, do the things that I want to do in the world, whether that be my family, my hobbies, all those things. And that just had me sitting in this place where it's really important for us to know what we're solving for. And I think often we don't. Often we're running from something instead of being really diligent and having intention about what we're going towards.
Why do you think that is? Is it fear? Is it insecurity? What's keeping us in that space?
I think it's a few things. One we talked about at the start of the show, Timothy. I think we're under more stress than we realize. And when we're under stress, I mean, we know this cognitively, our brains go into a fight or flight mentality. Our focus narrows, that is, we're not seeing the whole picture, right? And we tend to say, I either have to fight, I have to, sort of push hard, or I need to leave. And so the minute we start to feel some pain, when we're under stress, that's our initial reaction. I think the second thing that's happening, and I feel for the generation of workers that are coming into the workplace now, is social media has created this sense of everybody infinitely browsing, right? Like I can go on the internet at any time right now, and I can find someone who probably looks like me, has the same experiences as me, has the same skill set as me, except one thing's going to be different. They look unbelievably happy. Right. And so I think often we see that and we think, oh my God, the place I am isn't the right place for me. And the last thing I would say that I think is happening, and this one was really came through the interviews in the book, is I believe we're mistaking comfort, which is I'm in a place that works for me, for boredom or a lack of momentum.
Oh,
Because
wow.
here's the deal with feeling sort of that sense of deep commitment or belonging is that it's not the excitement of dopamine, right? It's not the excitement of a job or someone saying they love me or they think my experience is great and all those things that we get in recruiting. That idea of comfort is, it's like a warm hug. And so in this day and age when everything is sort of instant gratification and big dopamine hits, that's what we're all looking for. I think we're sort of not appreciating the feeling of comfort and how
Yeah.
much that matters. Because there's a real cost to transitions, right? We know that.
You solve for both the individual and companies trying to get this fit right. But who did you really write this for?
That's a great question. So I'll give you the story. When I first got approached to write the book was intended to be a book on culture in this new era of work. So it was meant to be like, how do you create culture with all the things happening, languishing and quiet quitting and the great resignation and remote work and all the things? And I started doing my first set of interviews, Timothy. And as I was going through those first sets of interviews, two things became true. First one is no company sets out to create a poor experience for their employees. It's antithetical to business, right? I mean, I don't believe any company sets out to do that. Maybe on the edges, but by and large, most companies are trying to create a place where people want to come and work. And I think the second thing that became really true is this idea that there is like one road to building a good culture, to building a good place to work. It just wasn't holding true. And so then I got in the deep interviews. I started asking two simple questions. Tell me about a time in your life when you had right fit, when you had this deep and authentic dedication to the place where you worked. And then tell me about a time that wasn't true. And I think in the conversation, it became really clear that it's not about good or bad culture, about toxic or engaging environments. It's about companies have a certain way that they can work in order to do the best in their market, in their industry. And we all have a certain way that we can work that'll bring out our best. And it's in whether or not those things match that the real magic starts to happen.
There are parts of the world where inclusion, equity, diversity have become warfare. You know, people feeling inadequate, some people feeling like, feeling like I'm not even qualified for this position. I was put in it because they needed a person who, or a woman. Let's talk about the right fit in the middle of complexity like that.
Here's what I'll say is I was fully aware when I titled the book that fit is a trigger word for a lot of people.
Yes,
And
yes,
I'll say
yes.
this to you, like Timothy, as I was sort of coming through the conversations with leaders, and it was a diverse set of leaders from all over the world, that was the word they were using, right? Is I didn't fit. I felt like everybody, it made sense for everybody, but not me. Right? There was just something that felt hard for them. And so as I started thinking about this topic, I'd say this to you is, hey, there's a difference between finding right fit and being asked to fit in. There's a lot of disenfranchised communities in the world that every day, because of who they are, experiences they've had, color of their skin, they're asked to fit in. They're asked to inherently change who they are and how they show up in the world in order to be accepted. I am not a proponent of that at all. Right. And the book actually says, hey, there's a lot of really gifted minds, great people, amazing individuals working in that space. And we need to continue to do that work every day. Really, what I was leaning into is to say, hey, this idea of looking at this question, not from where am I going to have to fit in to make this work, but to step back and say, what am I actually looking for? So I can find a place that matches both who I am, they value who I am as a person, and also they value how I like to do work. And that question, Timothy, has, questions you have to answer, like, how do you like to set strategy? How do you solve problems? How do you manage conflict? How do you like to socialize ideas? How do you like to get and give feedback? How do you like to be developed? How do you like to socialize with people? How do you like to have, what's your relationship with time? How do you like to think about recovery? These are the things that make up work. And we just don't talk about them long enough or deep enough, especially in the interview process. So often we'll go to
I
places,
see.
oh my God, I'm really excited. I get there and I start seeing how the place works, and it just doesn't work for me.
How do you know if it's me or them? I see people all the time going, this is a great company. And they start feeling like, I don't know if it's me or if it's the company.
Well, hey, I think back to your original question, it's both. So take Nike, for instance. Nike is an amazing consumer brand, right? I've had the honor to be able to work at Nike, at Target, at Google, at Mars Incorporated, the M&M and pet food company, and at Disney. And I will tell you, right, if you break those places down into how they work day to day, they're very different companies. Very different companies. So the person that's going to be a success at Nike probably isn't going to be as successful at Google, probably isn't going to be as successful at Target, and absolutely isn't going to be successful at Mars, because the way they think about those questions is inherently different. I'll give you a really tangible example, right? Socializing ideas, right? There's a certain way that every company likes to socialize ideas. Some will say, hey, I want you to build a beautiful brand deck. I want it to have poetry and great visuals. I want it to lift the roof off the building, right? And then there's places that say, I don't want any of that. I want you to put everything in a two-page memo that's short and sweet and to the point that I can read in 5 minutes. And then there's other companies that they want a full research study. They want a 25-page paper on why this is the most important decision for us to make. Now, if you're a talent, one of those three ways really works for you. And if you're a person who loves to build those brand decks and you're in a place that's asking you for a 25-page paper every time you want to present an idea, you're not in your best environment. You're never going to do your best work.
I see. Got it. I mean, you've set up the next question I had perfectly. I mean, in chapter six, you talk about figuring out if you really fit. Let's give a bit of a snapshot. How do you know if you really fit?
Yeah, I think there's a few things you can look for, right? The first one is, if you really fit by how you feel when you walk in that door every morning. Right? I'll give you some examples. So quotes from the book, when people talk about the right fit experiences they had, I didn't worry about the clothes I was wearing, the relationships formed faster, and I felt more comfortable more days. Right? Another person said, you know what, you're putting in all the hours, but it just doesn't feel like work.
Oh,
One of my
wow.
favorites, Timothy, that you'll know you have right fit when this is true, is it felt like I was spending more of my time practicing my craft.
Oh, wow.
Right? And here's the
Wow.
way I think about that one. You'll kind of love this, is there's a myth about creative energy. It's never blocked. Creative energy is always flowing. It's just a question of what is it flowing towards? Right? When you're in a right fit experience, it's flowing to your craft. Right. Almost every second of your day is spent really doing the thing that you're great in the world at. When you're in a wrong fit experience, most of your creative energy is flowing to three things. One, it's figuring out how this place works. Right. It's a mystery to you. Secondly, is it's flowing to managing negative emotions. This feels hard. This feels bad. This makes me feel like I don't belong. You're having to manage those emotions. Or your creative energy is sort of going to making up stories that allow you to cope with the day, allow you to just get through the day. And the thing is, I think most talent doesn't realize when you're in that wrong fit experience, yes, it feels like you're on a Ferris wheel. Yes, it feels like you're being maybe punched in the face every day in a different way. Yes, it feels like everyone has a secret decoder ring for success except for you. Most important thing to realize is that your creative energy is getting wasted. It's
I see.
going to try to make a place work that doesn't work for you. And in the end, you're not growing and developing around the very thing that you want to be great at in the world.
How do you feel about unbiasing recruitment, like seeking to remove people's names, removing gender, removing any form of identity, and assessing the CV, the bio based on its merits?
Hey, Timothy, here's what I'd say is I'm a big fan for unbiasing anything in the world, to be clear, right? I want everyone to have a clean and equal place. I want everyone to be at the same starting line, running the same race. But here's the issue with recruiting is, inherently every step of that process has some bias in it, right? You think about every career site you see of a company. Those career sites are part truth and they're part aspiration, right? That can create some bias or some misattribution of what I'm actually buying as a candidate. Resumes are biased, right? They create the best version of ourselves. Like I think about the recruiting space right now, and it's like a first date, man. I'm showing up as a candidate with my best version of my resume, telling you all the great things I do. I'm showing up with pre-rehearsed answers to every question. I'm showing up in my best clothes, on my best behavior. And so are companies. And so inherently, until we start to make the turn towards saying, hey, I actually want to meet you on your worst day. I want to meet you on your normal Tuesday. Because that's the person that I need to be able to assess. And I think until we start getting to that point where we're actually being able to tell the full story of who we are, that we're able to talk about how we like to do work. I mean, I think trying to just unbias, names and ages on a resume, that's a good first step, but it's insufficient because the information after that still
I
isn't
get it.
a version of the truth.
Let's stick to the company side for a moment. I saw some research where brands like KPMG, brands that did work that was a little bit, let's just say it, boring, did work that's boring, decided to go on the storytelling campaign. And KPMG in South Africa, for example, told a story about how they helped certify the first democratic election where Nelson Mandela became president. And people felt connected to that story in a way where, they never really felt proud of the work because it was just numbers before. How important is it to tell stories as a company to help people fit?
I think it's really important to tell four truthful stories, right, as a company. So I would tell, hey, anybody who's running a company right now, Timothy, one of the things that's happening to all of us is that the cycles of re-recruitment have shortened, right? It used to be when I could hire you, bring you in the company, give you a laptop, give you a job, and you're fine. You might stay there for 20 years, right? In this new day and age of infinite browsing and everyone's not totally sort of committed to the place they are, we have one foot in, one foot out. We have all this FOMO, this fear of missing out, right? We have to re-recruit our talent every single day. And I think there's four stories I would love leaders to tell every time they bump into their talent, big moments and small. The first one is, why is the world better with us in it? That's that purpose question. The second one is, how do we make money or have impact? People don't really understand that in a lot of companies. And so therefore they don't know how their work contributes. The third one is how we get work done, right? How do we solve problems, set strategy, manage conflict, develop, give feedback, all those things. We have to remind people how we actually do work, or we're going to lose our ways of working. Last but not least is, what's our unwavering promise to you? What will you get in return for putting all your energy towards our company? And that's the equity piece of it. And I think if leaders were focused on saying your primary job as a leader is to answer those four questions every day for your people, we'd see engagement go up, we'd see productivity go up, we would see commitment go up.
Before someone makes the leap to the next company, you talk a bit about enhancing a relationship. What is one thing someone could do? Decide, let me give this one last shot before I bounce and go to the next opportunity.
In the book, one of the questions I asked at the end of the interviews was, okay, so you've either had this right fit or this wrong fit experience. If you could give advice to the next person who's going to look for a job or decide whether or not they're going to leave the place they are, what would you tell them? And what came up in those conversations was what we ended up calling buffers, right? These are things that can keep right fit true over time. And if you're in a hard fit or wrong fit experience, it can make it a little bit more palpable. And I think the way I think about that, Timothy, is to say, hey, the truth is organizations change. They're growing. I mean, think about Google. When I was there, we were hiring like 27,000 people a year,
Wow.
right? Companies are organic. People are organic. So your job isn't going to be the same. The minute you take your job, you're in it for one day, that job is changing and the company's changing. So we have to sort of continue to renew our commitment. And so these buffers, a few things I would say is one, make sure you're connecting the purpose of the company every day. Right? Websites, stories of customers, whatever it is, make sure you start your day saying, wow, we're really doing good work here. That'll help make all the hard things easier, right? Secondly, is walk into every day realizing life is the greatest classroom on earth. Right? Good, right fit, wrong fit, hard fit, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm amazed. Like, I come from this place where I'm like, life is truly the greatest classroom on earth. I have so many lessons I'm going to get to learn today. If I can stay out of that fight or flight mentality and say, this is just another chance to learn, to grow, to get better, that helps you with that. A couple that came up that I really liked, though, were more on the relationship side. One is you got to find a doppelganger in your organization. You know, doppelgangers in the traditional term is someone who looks like you, it's your twin. In the workplace doppelganger, the thing I was sort of keen in on was if you can find someone who has the same experiences as you, the same skill set as you, they work in approximately the same job as you, except they're different on one category. They're thriving and you're struggling. And if you can find them, you can look at that and say, hey, maybe this isn't the company. Maybe it's just my current situation. Maybe I'm on a dysfunctional team. Maybe I'm not working for the right leader. Maybe I don't have the right projects. And often I think we sort of conflate issues with the day-to-day experience, you know, my manager, my team, the work that I'm actually doing day-to-day, with an issue with the company. It
I
might not be
see.
that the company is a good place for you to be, but your current situation in the company isn't the right one.
Yeah. I wanted to ask this question in the start, but I'm glad I didn't, because I think now this question is going to land properly. So much about the workplace has changed post-COVID, et cetera. But are we expecting too much? Before we start thinking about what's ideal for us, do we need to have a harder question with ourselves? Like at the end of the day, do we need to go to the mirror and go, is my expectations unrealistic, based on this ideal of just wanting to be a person who, what do you call these people who just sort of take their laptop and travel around the world? With there's a
Digital
name for these
nomad. Digital
digital
nomad.
nomads. Yes, digital nomads. I just want to be a digital nomad and work on the beach and that's it. I don't want to connect with people. I don't want, let's talk about how the workplace has changed and whether or not we're just spoiled in some cases.
Timmy, I'm glad you bring it up because here's sort of my perspective on the question, and I love the question, is I feel like a couple things have happened. One is we have wrapped far too much of our identity in the work that we do. Right. So often I see a lot of people who, because of the amount of hours they spend at work, right? And we'll spend 13.5 years of our adult life at work. It'll be a third of our adult life. It's second only to sleep. So work matters. But I think what we tend to do is we tend to personalize work too much, right? The work doesn't belong to us, it belongs to the company we're working in. Right? Work belongs to the role or the seat that we're sitting in. But I think the first thing is how do you separate your identity as a person from the work that you're doing in a moment? Don't wrap too much of yourself into that, right? People are giving you feedback on the work, not on you. Right? The work might not be what we need, but that doesn't mean you aren't. And so I think we sometimes conflate that. I think the second thing that we're doing is because we're sort of losing community in a lot of other spaces and places in the world, right? Our neighborhoods are breaking down. Our communities aren't as tight. We don't have as many sort of civic places to go and engage with each other. We're asking work to fulfill a lot of things. We're asking work to give us purpose. We're asking work to give us meaning. We're asking work to give us community. We're asking work to give us financial security. We're asking work to give us all of the learning and development we can get. And it's like, kind of look at that. I'm like, we are expecting too much because primarily companies are created to return shareholder value, right? We've sort of lost the hierarchy of identity. When we go into a company, it has to be shareholder and customer first, company second, department third, team fourth, and then you're last. And I think we've sort of conflated that. We've started to see companies as instruments for our own livelihood. And that's something I think we have to change. It's not that we're entitled. I don't believe that. I just think we kind of mucked up the hierarchy of identity and lost the fact that companies exist to bring value to the world, not to be instruments of our own utility, right?
Is there a dream person you would have loved to interview?
Oh, that's a great question. I would have loved to interview. There's a few thought leaders. I would have loved to get Adam Grant. I used a lot of his stuff. I think Brené Brown has a particularly interesting sort of look. Susan David is talking a lot about empathy and emotion. Pete Davis, which wrote this book called Dedicated about this idea of infinite browsing and a loss of commitment. I would have loved to interview him. And I think about, I would have also, if I go away from celebrities and thought leaders to, I would have liked to interview a lot more people who are struggling. Because here's the deal, Timothy, is the interviews, the most important part of the interviews for me weren't the right fit. Oh my God, life is great. It was these wrong fit experiences. I was talking to CEOs, super successful people who have been holding on to this wrong fit experience because the company that they experienced that in told them it was because they weren't good enough. They didn't perform well enough. And I watched and I think we just do a disservice is most people we hire are fully capable. They're fully fledged adults. They have the capacity to be brilliant. And because they don't fit the way we like to work, they don't solve problems the way we solve problems, socialize ideas, the way we social ideas, they don't give feedback or appreciate the way we like to give it. We turn to them and say, it's not us, it's you. That I know that those conversations were so cathartic to people, and that's kind of motivation that I used to keep writing the book was like anyone that reads that and does those excursions, the thing they will realize is that often the times when someone told them they weren't good enough, it was because they were probably in the wrong place to bring out their best.
Let's close this by talking or speaking to the heart of someone who feels like I'm determined to find the right fit, but it's going to be a while, and I'm miserable right now. What would you say to them?
I would say the first thing is start, and we said at the start getting really in touch with the intention you have. Instead of saying, hey, I'm not in a good place now, I want to be in a better place, get really clear about what that better place is. Right? I mean, crystal clear. Like, what do you want your random Tuesday in the middle of December to feel like? What do you want to do? Who do you want to work for? What values do you want the company to hold? Get really clear about those things and return to them often, right? I think secondly, as I would say, just make life outside of work magic, right? The thing that happens in wrong fit experiences is we tend to say, hey, I'm not succeeding. So what do I have to do, Timothy? I got to work harder. I got to spend more time. And in the end, if it's a wrong fit, you're just riding with your non-dominant hand every day. You're only going to make it so good. And working harder isn't going to change the fact that it's just the way the company works doesn't really work for you. And so instead of working harder, right, I tell people be equitable, spend enough time doing the things you can do, and make sure you don't yard sale your life outside of work because that's where your energy, motivation, love, and sort of engagement's going to be born out of. I think the last thing I would say is don't run away, run towards. And so you're getting a paycheck, you're in a place, you can, sort of make it through. And the more you see this as a learning experience, the more you see it as something that might be finite, it allows you to just interact with that in a different way, right? And so make sure you are running towards something, not simply saying, I can't do anymore, I gotta leave, and then putting yourself in a position where, you're stuck. You might not get a job. I mean, in this day and age, you could be 6, 9, 12 months I would tell people just to say, hey, you know what? The minute you start to look, you're going to relate to the moment that you're in a little bit differently. You're going to see it differently. And that alone is going to allow you to stay in that a little bit longer. And you should, because you want security above all else.
Dr. Andre Martin, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome, Timothy. I had a pleasure. You asked some fantastic questions, my friend.
As we wrap up, just for those who want to partner with you, work with your organization, how do they get in contact with you?
There's a couple of places. So I'm currently working with a creative firm out of Portland as their culture strategist in residence. It's joyful.co. So you can find us at Joyful. Go to the website. The place you can find me is at my website, www.wrongfitrightfit.com. There, we also have a newsletter I'm relaunching in April, May that is called Monday Matters. It's like two or three practical tips to make every week just a little bit better. So if that's of interest to you, if you're in a hard fit experience, you just want someone who can give you a few practical things you can do, check out the newsletter. There's some good stuff out there.
Well, thank you for your service and thank everyone for listening. And please share this with someone who's trying to find the right fit or maybe in a fit that's slightly ambiguous. Until next time.